Electric bicycles are my jam. I'm turning into a nut for a good e-bike. It's easy to get around, we save gas not driving our car for short trips to the store, and I'm getting a little extra exercise. The folks at Velotric are sponsoring a series of videos on my channel to show off some affordable e-bikes and help people get up to speed. It's easier than you think, and prices have never been more competitive. You can catch those videos on my YouTube channel, but if you're interested in shopping an e-bike, head over to velotric.bike/somegadgetguy and look at their road bikes and fat tires. Again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. If any of those bikes look good to you, you can save an additional $60 off an already low price by using the coupon code SOMEGADGET60, SOMEGADGET60 at checkout. Once again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy and coupon code SOMEGADGET60, and I thank Velotric for being a sponsor on this show. This means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Pagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget. I can't do it in one breath anymore. I had the patter down so well that I could fly. Some Gadget Guy is the SGG of this terribly named podcast series, but of course the QA, that's the important part, stands for question and answers. We like to have more interactive conversation on the tech news. Already seeing an incredible group of techies joining this stream. I'm seeing Barry Johnson, Gormlord, J-Man, Snorkel, Kapakash, Bray Gray, Paul Periotaku, Jojo the Techie. What's up, Jojo? TED Talks Tech. We've got a good crew already, so I'm feeling pretty good. This is going to be a really news-heavy block. And then I want to try and do something I don't do very well on the podcast. So many tech podcasts do a really good job of kind of mixing in actual reviews, right? I love hanging out with the folks at All About Android, and they've got like a gadget block, but they actually like kind of go hands-on and they show you some stuff, or if there's a new app, they kind of go top-down camera. So I'm setting this up, and it might totally fail, but got a bunch of phones here running Android 13, and we're going to try to talk through just a few of the differences that I've noticed in setting up Android 13, how the Pixel is a very unique flavor of Android 13, and how BBK brands, OnePlus and Vivo, are doing wildly different things with their Android 13. So, good morning. I hope everybody had a phenomenal weekend. We're right into the season this week. You know, my favorite holiday of the year is Thanksgiving. We're going to have to talk to TK because I don't know what we're going to do for the Best of Our Week podcast. Probably have to not be on a Thursday unless we can do like food comatose, TK and Juan. I don't know. Did you use any tech? I ate a lot of turkey. So I'm getting ahead of myself here. That is the cart way before the horse. We have a show to do now. Now. But I hope everyone had a lovely weekend and that we're kind of into the swing of the holidays. And I hope that you're able to take some time to really celebrate, unplug, get some downtime, do some fun stuff. It's a lot. It's a lot keeping up with everything day to day. And then, you know, the excitement and the energy of the holidays becomes an additional agitation. So hopefully tech tools around you and all of the fun toys that we get to play with are helping you sort through all of that, and they aren't contributing to that issue. I was up late last night trying to work on a tablet that I'm pretty confident I have a lemon, that the company who sent me a product to review sent me something that doesn't really function properly. And I burned a lot of time on that. And you're like, oh, you know, like, I don't have anything to show for that. If I made a video about it, I'd get a ton of views because like, oh, company can't do anything right. But I don't want to be that guy. So again, I just put the cart way before the horse. I feel like we need to jump in. We have a lot of news block to cover, and like I said, I want to go hands on with some of this hardware here. J-Man 150. It's surprising because it's BBK. I don't know that that's too surprising. Is that surprising for BBK? Because BBK has like five different flavors of how they manage Android on all of their various sub-brands. So I always thought that that was kind of on par for BBK. Their updates are actually great. Anyone who's been rocking, I mean, if I cut back to the little stack of phones over there, one of those phones is a OnePlus 9 Pro, and one of those phones is a OnePlus 8 Pro. And they're all rocking some delicious Android 13 goodness. So I'm feeling real positive. Like, if you were on the OnePlus train, especially how good the OnePlus 9 Pro was, I feel like you're in real good shape right now. But anyway, why don't we knock out some housekeeping, because even that's gonna be kind of a lengthier conversation. And I don't want to focus too much on, like, the pillaging of Twitter, but a part of that is also like in what's happening with Twitter, where a number of people are going to kind of hold these conversations. And I'm joining a team of people. Like, I'm still on Twitter, in that twitter.com is a functional website, and my account, I'm like, I haven't pulled my account, but increasingly I've been spending time elsewhere. Excuse me. So, why don't we get this out of the way here? Barry, thanks. Barry with the assist. We have Color OS, Oxygen OS, Realme OS, FunTouch OS, and Origin OS, just to name a few. I feel there's always been a colorful diversification of Android updates through BBK. All right, here we go into some housekeeping. I do want to highlight last week's podcast. We spent a bit of time talking about the MediaTek announcements. I want to spend a little time talking about Qualcomm, but for the more practical deep dive into everything that went off at the Qualcomm announcement, please check out Best of Our Week. TK Bay, I believe, is finally back from traveling, but he was actually out in Maui. We had him out on location. I like that I get to sound like I sent TK Bay out on location to cover the Qualcomm event. Well, I'm just, you know, sitting back here at home chilling like an editor. That's not how that goes down. TK's his own man. But we're going to be talking a little bit about Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, specifically how I feel next year's lineup of chips is going to look, because there's a huge consumer benefit to having this competition, but it also makes the conversation just a little more nuanced and a little more confusing. Case in point, I have a standalone video, if anyone wants to watch that, Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 versus Dimensity 9200 versus Tensor 2, what we know so far, where I also get to show off, like, hey, if you've just been looking at Geekbench scores, you're missing some incredible real-world performance, specifically how a Tensor 2 in a Pixel 7 can absolutely crush an 8 Plus Gen 1 in my Xiaomi 12S Ultra. Again, I keep getting responses from people, like, I'll show a practical demonstration, like, hey, I put up a video editing timeline, I put these two phones head-to-head, and one phone clearly wins. It's not close. It's really not close. And then I'll get a reply, well, I'll believe that Tensor performance can match the Snapdragon when we see some benchmarks to back that up. Like, that's the problem. You won't, because benchmarks are, I'm not going to say they're lies. They're not lies. They are only indications of how well those phones can run those benchmarks, and they have absolutely no real-world bearing on how your real apps and games are likely to perform. So it feels good to get that big number. Doesn't mean your work's getting done any faster. Big number, good, but no. Then I also really want to shout out, I got a couple videos out from Slick Deals. A video was published on HBO Max, especially looking at how HBO is gutting their catalog for $15 a month. And then I finally got back in studio with my sister from another Mrs. Trisha Hirschberger. Best Dyson deals of all time. Now, this sounds like clickbait, like we're going to try and sell you a new Dyson vacuum, right? I kind of need to talk to the folks at Slick Deals. I'm not sure that the title really showed off what we're doing in this series, and we really want to make this a regular thing on Slick Deals. We're playing a game to show how little Trisha and I know about deal shopping. So that what this video is actually a game where they put up a product, and then we have to try and guess what the deal was. And so these are all of the best Dyson deals that have ever shown up on Slick Deals. And man, Trisha and I do not know how to shop for appliances. We're really bad at playing this game, which I feel kind of makes the game more fun, infuriating. Like, if you've ever done some comparison shopping for like a Dyson hair straightener, I don't even know what they are. We get to play with, like, they actually had one in house. Apparently they're really hard to get your hands on. Is this like hair, what do you call that? Now I can't even remember what the word is, but anyway, so we're playing with it and we're, you know, doing all the attachments and stuff. And they're like, I don't know, it was $50 off, I guess. And so we had a lot of fun putting that video together. I don't feel the title really represents what the video actually is. Dormlord, but Juan, Tensor is basically just an Exynos. It's just an Exynos that Samsung has never built anything like a Tensor. But yeah, it's just like an Exynos. Paul Purry, when I want to test benchmark apps, I run benchmark apps. That's true. I mean, there's got to be at least seven people on this planet that go out of their way to spend hundreds or maybe even thousands of dollars on phones per year, and all they do is just revel and bask in their Geekbench scores. I'm sure that those seven people actually exist. Gary Fireman, Dyson prices are about 400% over everyone else, which is why it's kind of fun to see Trisha and I fail to figure out what Dyson vacuum cleaners have been on sale. And I mean, it's like over the entire course of the Slick Deals website. So if there's ever been like a front page deal on this model of Dyson vacuum, we're trying to guess what that was. I think we even tied. Like, we're so bad at it. We've been thinking off the same brain for long enough that we kind of sort of ended up matching our scores. So a major video went out late last week. What do we got? We got Pixel 7 Pro versus Xperia 1 Mark IV, the most important phones of the year. I tried to do a little dichotomy, a little black and white, a little panda. Checking out I've been spending some more quality time. My SIM card is kind of just living in the Xperia 1 Mark IV. And a lot around the same time, we've also been, you know, trying to dig into Pixel 7 Pro performance and what that phone brings to the table. And let me get that out of the way there. And again, I've been getting some really fun, snarky comments on this, like, oh, most important. It's not like anyone even knows about the Xperia. And I purposely put here, like, literally in the first sentence of the description, I'm not calling these the best phones of the year, and certainly not the most popular phones of the year. I'm saying they're the most important phones of the year. And I have one comment on that YouTube video, which if anyone wants to check out, I think is hilarious. Someone going in is like, well, that's like saying the Yardbirds are like the most important band in music history and not the Beatles. And you're like, yeah, you're kind of playing yourself, because the Yardbirds are not one of the most popular bands in music history. But I think a lot of music historians would say that they are critically important to rock history, which is kind of what I'm saying here. So thank you for the wonderful analogy. Thank you. You played yourself. So it's been interesting. Let me kind of wrap up housekeeping here. And then if you want to dig into my YouTube comment shenanigans, we can do that too. Lastly, this is a big deal for me. This is the second major video of a little series that I'm putting together. The Velotric Nomad 1 Fat Tire e-bike. Is it a good road bike? Nomad 1, big ol' fat tire e-bike, 750-watt motor. Man, I am super getting into e-bikes. And I'm telling you now, over 2023, I'm still going to cover phones and tablets and all that fun stuff. I got to get out more. And some of the conversations that kind of spark, you know, like, how do I accessorize an e-bike? What are the rules for riding an e-bike? How do I protect and secure an e-bike? Are there government programs for bike theft that I can look into? Is there like an extra insurance thing that I need to set up? I've just really been digging them. The ride is so fun. The taking little car trips out of the equation, saving a little gas, it's just been real nice. So this is another major video. The first one, Velotrix sponsored is helping me sponsor this series. And the first was just kind of getting up to speed on a good road bike. The second is kind of comparing what's the difference between a road bike and a fat tire bike. And then I've got a whole bunch of smaller, more bite-sized videos planned. The first two, if you go back to back, part one and part two together, it's like 40 minutes of me talking about e-bikes on location. I'm even out of the office. But this is kind of a big deal for me. And if anyone's interested in that kind of like urban mobility, alternative commuting, better for the environment, healthier lifestyle kinds of conversations, and ways that we can use technology to kind of augment something that's very traditional. It's a bicycle. A bicycle is just such a wonderful mode of transportation. Throwing a little electric motor on it makes it techy and fun above just being a good bicycle and a good for you. It's kind of like the eating your vegetables of personal mobility. But the motor is kind of nice. I really like that motor. So more to come on that. It's something I'm increasingly more interested and more passionate about, and some stuff I've really got to play with. And that's going to have a bigger focus, a bigger showcase on the channel as I get to kind of mix those videos into everything else that we're talking about. So on the Patreon, I have a video in pre-release. If you're in the tier of early access, there is a video that's available. LumaFusion on Android, why I'm dropping PowerDirector. LumaFusion is the real deal. I set out just to do a basic feature comparison. Like I was expecting, like I'm going to shoot like 5 minutes. Oh, LumaFusion does this, PowerDirector does that. LumaFusion does this, PowerDirector does that. I actually, in my head, had kind of the idea of the simple, like, you should just use what you like, but here are the differences between these two products. Didn't turn out that way. Not even close. Spent the first 5 minutes of me just rambling to my camera, explaining, airing all of my grievances with PowerDirector and KineMaster's recent business models. The direction that those apps are going, I can't back. I really can't support. So I'm not going to pretend that this is just a fair head-to-head, features and comparisons, because I've been cutting video on my phones heavily since the Axon 7 and the LG V20. I think like for Pocket now, the first video I did, soup to nuts, all on a mobile device, I failed on the first gen iPad Pro. We actually did try to do, can you review the iPad Pro on the iPad Pro? And I couldn't quite get to a finished video. I got really close, and that was exciting. What was it? Was the Huawei P10? I think it was the Huawei P10, and I was out at an Oppo launch shooting everything on a Huawei. And then I did all the VO and I did all the editing in my hotel room out on location from the Huawei to cover an Oppo launch. And I feel like ever since then, I've just been hardcore. Same thing, like most of my press events and trade shows, I don't cover with a laptop. I mean, especially if I can help it. Maybe sometimes I'll still travel and I'll leave the laptop in my hotel room just as a backup in case I need it. For years, I really haven't needed a laptop. It's been great. And increasingly now, with these types of just wonderfully powerful tools, PowerDirector, KineMaster, and now LumaFusion, there's less and less reason for me to go mobile with some type of computer. It's really just faster, easier, more immediate and accessible to edit from a phone. So, that's on the Patreon right now. That's in early access. That should be going public sometime this week, just for my holiday schedule to kind of be a little lighter this week. But I still have some videos and probably another podcast coming out for the week of Thanksgiving. And this is, I feel like, where we should. Let me get this out of the way. Oh, Sorehunter talking about Geekbench. Hold on. I just don't want to highlight this comment here. It's more than seven people. Pair the high benchmark value with a huge price tag, and some people will just wet themselves. All right. So there are at least greater than or equal to 7 people on this planet who spend tons of money just to own a phone, to run AnTuTu, and that's all they ever do with it. They don't do anything. They don't take phone calls on it. They don't play games on it. They just want that AnTuTu score. And that's pretty great. All right, let me get this out of the way here. Paul Burry, the Yardbirds? How old are we? I didn't come up with that example. I didn't come up with that. That was someone in my YouTube comments trying to shame me for liking Sony Xperias. Oh, like, who even knows about Sonys? That's like saying the Yardbirds existed. I mean, like, that was his argument. I had to make fun of that. to that person's YouTube profile's face, I had to say, you played yourself. That was a dumb example. Can we just admit that that was a dumb example? You did bad. You did bad and you should feel bad. So... All right. Here's just the transition. Actually, you know what? Let me take a quick drink of coffee here because I'm getting all lip smacky here. One second. I hate that at the end. I do that on purpose to just mess with people. So Twitter's in bad shape. I also wrote just kind of it wasn't even like an editorial. It really was just like a Juan's feeling sad kind of production diary post on the Patreon, patreon.com/thumbgadgetguy. Patreon's getting a lot of attention today. Here's the summation on Twitter, because I'm not going to spend any other time talking about Twitter on this podcast. I feel Elon Musk is getting to live in so many people's brains rent-free. He's doing things just to be an agitator. Nothing he's doing is in earnest. He is trying to make a spectacle out of this because that's what's going to drive traffic, that he can hopefully entice advertisers to come back. All of this is just drama machine in high gear from someone who does not approach conversations with any type of consistency or earnest. He's not a figure to look up to. He's lost any credibility in this conversation, and now he's doing outright damage to these companies that he's been a showman for. Increasingly, this strips away this veneer of, you know, tech genius, misunderstood, wild, eccentric. No, he's kind of just a rich jerk. And I feel it's fine calling that out for what it is. His behavior has been reprehensible, and he has done everything in his power to absolutely wreck the credibility and the foundation of a site that definitely we shouldn't have valued the way that we did, but became such an incredible platform for citizen journalism and in-the-moment reporting. Obviously, it came with a whole bunch of baggage. And the former people who used to run and operate Twitter, I don't think they did a great job of abiding by their responsibilities in managing that platform. But what the platform ultimately could be used for now has been completely dismantled. I do not care that there is a functional website called Twitter.com. What I valued about that website has basically been destroyed. Twitter, as I used it, as I valued it, is dead. And I don't believe that there's any way to regain the trust of that platform with the current moves that this leadership is making in completely unraveling. I mean, this is like Weezer's sweater. They're pulling the thread as aggressively as they can because it jacks up their traffic. And all they care about are getting those bigger numbers, getting those more eyeballs on the site, showing advertisers, hey, we're still making these big moves. Look, we made an announcement. And now a whole bunch of people are on the site again. Isn't that amazing? So it's all fake. It's all manipulation and the most grotesque kind of media manipulation, which was the thing I actually liked about old Twitter. It was kind of the last Web 2.0 option that wasn't heavily filtered and algorithmically based and ratcheted up to that degree. You could go in and set your timeline to real time and just kind of keep up with the people that you cared about, and Twitter was glorious. Twitter was beautiful for that. So Twitter's dead, and I'm trying to find opportunities to move on. I've been spending a lot more time just lurking in my own Discord and lurking on my Patreon and kind of poking around some of my YouTube comments. been getting replies to articles that I'm posting on somegadgetguy.com. I'm happy to host conversations there too. That's the thing. I want that broad techie lunch table filled in again. And I had it, I was comfortable. I had it really well set up on Twitter. So one of the major talking points, one of the major transitions has been another, it's not a social media platform. It's a loose collection of platforms that all operate under a similar mechanic. And it's really, it's got a steep learning curve, but it kind of takes me back to what I liked about the early days of Web 2.0. So a lot of folks have been trying to migrate and trying to figure out a service called Mastodon. I am just getting up to speed. I'm just starting to figure out Mastodon. This is my profile on Mastodon. I'm some gadget guy on Mastodon. I am on the sdf.org server. I don't know that I'll stay on the sdf.org server, but it was where I wanted to just try to check it out, just try to get started. So at somegadgetguy at mastodon.sdf.org. So Mastodon is a little different, and it's a little headier. Mastodon is not one centralized service like Twitter or Facebook. The hardest thing about getting started on Mastodon is picking a server. So we can make all of these analogies, we can make all of these comparisons. It's a little like this, but then it's also like that. It's a little like Discord. You kind of have a user account, right? But you can go into different Discord servers to have conversations, but your account is persistent and it follows you from server to server to server. Mastodon is built a little like that. There are these little pockets of server activity that are usually self-funded or community-funded or, you know, not-for-profit funded. So these servers are getting hammered right now. I believe, like, over the last 2 weeks, they've seen an influx of over 6 million new users, which is heavy. And so you'll go to load up your Mastodon instance, and you're like, oh, I guess I can't check Mastodon right now because it's real busy. So you sign into a server, but then your user account is basically visible across all of Mastodon, all of the other servers. Everyone can find you on any other server or collection or group. I chose a server that I thought would just be kind of fun. Specifically, it was built kind of around more around music and art and content creation production, but it's really like deep into the art. So I get a little traction on photography from my server. I might switch servers. I don't know. We'll see. If I do, it shouldn't be too difficult to still find at some gadget guy because my account will kind of migrate all of its data. But that's the tricky getting started bit. Once you're in, it functions a lot like any other social media platform. You publish short form. It's a microblogging kind of service. You can upload images. I don't think it handles video very well. You can set up polls. You can link to websites. You know, hashtags are clickable for better information. And it just feels really consistently like kind of like a Twitter clone, but without the singular authority of Twitter.com's management. It's really cleanly laid out. I'm going to put out the plea. If you're interested in continuing and maintaining these conversations, there are now a whole splintering of different places where we can go. I'm hanging out on Reddit. I'm hanging out in my Discord. I'm hanging out. I've been reviving my Flickr account for better photo sharing. We're kind of getting spread out all over the place, but Mastodon is going to have some of that Twitter-like appeal where you can easily put together a couple little thoughts, you know, share a link. You know, I did today's podcast, you know, has been published on Mastodon. And you can find all of that information and you can, you know, jump into the stream. You can join the show. So it's kind of the necessary situation, I think, for a lot of us. How do we want to, you know, invest our time, our effort, our energy? I don't want to put that kind of effort or energy into Twitter anymore. my Twitter use is going to be more autopilot-y. It's just going to kind of hang out. It's a lot like Facebook. There is a facebook.com/somegadgetguy. It is basically just auto-populated from other things that I publish other places, and I don't check in on it very much. It's just there to exist, to not let anyone else steal facebook.com/somegadgetguy. Twitter.com/somegadgetguy, similarly, is probably just gonna hang out. So I hope that we can continue these conversations. I hope that people will make the effort to continue these conversations on platforms that handle personal data with more responsibility, that handle their obligations to fulfilling the discourse and the sharing of information with integrity. Twitter is not going to be that anymore. Twitter is going to exist now in a flavor where sharing disinformation is radically hyped up, and that gets people angry and miserable, and they get lots of outrage traffic. I don't spend time on that. As soon as we saw that internal study from Facebook experimented on their users. And they did this thing where, hey, you know what? We can make people really happy by, you know, manicuring their feed so they get information that we know they'll enjoy, or we can make them angry and miserable. And wouldn't you know it, when the algorithm was tuned to anger and misery, Facebook time on site skyrocketed. And now Twitter is going to be doing the same thing. And that's not good for your mental health. That's not good for your relationships. That's not good for your friendships. And it's ultimately not good for Twitter. Again, we're watching advertisers leave. Phil Schiller just pulled his account. There was another major corporation that just pulled all of their distinct Twitter accounts. Like, not only are we not going to advertise, we're just not going to have a presence on the website anymore. And so now we have opportunities. Through this sort of tragic dismantling of a social media service that I genuinely enjoyed, we can now look elsewhere for alternatives that might deliver some of the foundation and some of the appropriateness of conversation that we used to have. So I'm on Mastodon. I hope to see you anywhere else. Seriously, I've got a great group of people here just hanging out. Septian Patterson, yeah, Google it, dude. Septian saying Facebook experimented on people. Just look up Facebook social media experiment. It's not that hard to find. But they did run internal studies on what makes people stay on the site longer. And I had no idea Flickr was still around. Flickr is awesome. Flickr got bought out by SmugMug. And when I was still selling stock photography, I had a SmugMug account, but I closed it down. I made a little money. It was okay, but I was never going to be a great stock photographer. SmugMug is a phenomenal resource site, like for you to sell work, for you to put together presentations and packages, for you to charge money, and people can buy prints of your work. SmugMug is phenomenal. I didn't stick with it because I didn't think I was good enough. Huge resource. So SmugMug bought Flickr as their sort of social media front face. And you can kind of lean into a Flickr Pro account, which sort of becomes a SmugMug account. It's real good. And if you want to share high quality photos, Flickr is kind of the best place to do it. Your photography doesn't get horrifically compressed and smushed. You can share, it's built to actually share photos, so you're not stuck in this, like, maybe it's a square or maybe it's a reel. Like, you can share short form video on Flickr, but it's definitely not built around shorts and reels and TikToks. Like, that's not the gig. Oh, JoJo the techie. I know. I miss it too. JoJo says, can we just bring back Google Plus? Man, that was such a brilliant little experiment in really fine-tuning who you were talking to and building little communities and groups. And it was the best. It was really great. Yeah, cop a cash. Exactly, same. I'll scream it to the hills. Bring back Google Plus. And TK. TK's in the chat. Everyone say sabajo. TK Bay, super glad to see you in here. So, yeah. Social media is a wacky, broken thing. The biggest players of Web 2.0 are pretty much all basically gone. The current incarnations of Web 2.0 social media are essentially dead. But little glimmers of those original ideas still persist. Why I still kind of enjoy, I don't like their leadership very much, but why I kind of still enjoy finding those little pockets of communities on Reddit. Mastodon has just been really refreshing to jump into and experiment with. Going back to Flickr for sharing my photos is definitely an old cranky person. Web 2.0, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. But so many of these little websites still kind of exist in a form where you get to the data, there's less manipulation of the data, and then you find like-minded individuals that care about that conversation. They care about the conversation. It seems like Web 3.0 is, how can I just be cynical and disruptive and mock everything? I don't join any conversation in earnest. I'm just poop posting so that I get people riled up. And it's being fronted by people like Elon Musk. I mean, that's all he does on social media is just try to rile people up because it gets eyeballs on his failing site that he spent $44 billion of investors' money on. And some of those investors are not nice people. True, Alex. So it's a shallow husk of itself, much like YouTube. I haven't been particularly... YouTube is doing that, like, creator survey. Make sure you're included, and we want to be inclusive and help people. Like, I'm not taking your survey. As frustrated as I am with Facebook and Twitter, YouTube is starting to fit that bill, too. This race towards TikTokification, making every video as disposable as possible... all of the creators that are in just massive burnout, but they've got to keep feeding the machine because the YouTube algorithm is hugely punitive if you aren't constantly supplying it with content. All of those conversations we need to pay attention to. A lot of your favorite content creators are struggling. I mean, it's pretty clear. You get some novelty and you get some early wins on YouTube and it feels really good and you keep putting more energy and dedicating more effort into it, and then YouTube will pull the rug out from under you. If what you're making is not algorithmically popular 6 months later, then you are persona non grata. And all of that effort, all of that energy, all of that momentum is just taken away. I had some really deep conversations with some content creators during the MediaTek event. It is not my place to name names. I'm sure if they want to have those conversations with their audience, they will. But it was like, hey, I want to be able to take a little break from my YouTube channel, but I can't. Hey, I inherited a YouTube channel from someone else, and I'm trying to rebuild my relationship with that audience, and I can't. It's getting really tough out there. And on top of all of the stress and pressure of getting to the end of the year, getting through the holidays, working with your clients and your sponsors, and trying to keep up your conversation with your audience is really tough. So on top of all of that, let's switch social media networks and join me over on Mastodon. Oh, and Gary the Fireman rocking my socks, gifting a tier one sub to Kappa Cash and Gormlord. Thank you very much, Gary. I really appreciate that. You've really been a wonderful contributor and supporter for this podcast, and it means a lot to me. I am still terrible at doing things like, I need to have like a little trumpet fanfare. Someone just gifted a sub. Burr, burr, burr. And it'll probably end up just being that. Like, I'll just sample that little bit of audio out of this podcast and then kind of throw that in there. Twinfolk Tech, what's going on, sir? Glad you could make the stream. Wonder if Blue Sky will not be sucky. I have zero faith in Blue Sky, but Mastodon has been kicking around in the background for a while. So I'm going to give that a good try and see where we're at. Gormlord, are you saying you don't want to be in the YouTube Rewind this year? I love that those all got canceled. My absolute favorite YouTube community thing was not a YouTube Rewind. Man, it must have been... 6 or 7 years ago, but it was one of their April Fool's jokes, and it was absolutely one of the most stunningly beautiful love letters to a community that I've ever seen. But it was the YouTube Awards, where they hired two presenters, and those two presenters did, I want to say, a 10-hour stream. And this was back when Hangouts on Air was a thing. They did this 10-hour live broadcast reading through the names of real videos. And the whole conceit of the April Fool's joke was every single video that had been uploaded to YouTube at that point was eligible to win a YouTube award. They were all official nominees. And they were reading and showing clips of a lot of them, too. They were reading the actual names of real YouTube videos and the names of the creators and maybe a sentence of the description. And those two presenters went for like 8 to 10 hours on that stream. And we've never seen YouTube really celebrate its own community like that since. That is still one of the most amazing examples of joke in execution, but not a joke at the expense of a community, a joke that actually celebrated that community. I still think it's one of the most beautiful moments of internet that has ever been created. So let me get this out of the way and get this right here. So Mr. Milligan's the only thing I want to wrap this up with. Mr. Milligan says, I would, but I don't trust Mastodon. So here's the thing. Mastodon is not one thing. Mastodon is a collection of servers. I'm on an art and photography server, and I might decide to leave that server. Twit, the folks at This Week in Tech, they operate a server. Tech Hub operates a server. There are numerous not-for-profits that operate servers. There is no one central authority. There is no one control. So if you're on a server, and suddenly the people who manage that server start doing things that you disagree with, you can move to another server without canceling your entire Mastodon presence. It's kind of a pain. You have to migrate your data, move it over. You've got to package it. Sure, that's not great, but you can do it. Right now, I viscerally disagree with the direction that Twitter is heading. I have no recourse. I can't go anywhere else. I can't do anything else. Twitter is dead. Twitter has zero faith. So I can just coast on Twitter, or I can cancel my account, but I can't go anywhere else to do something with it. So you're picking different pros and cons. Yeah, but you're missing the other half of the equation. Mr. Malignance, the Federation is too loose. Each individual makes rules and can support horrible things. And if you find that they're supporting something you don't like, you go somewhere else. You don't throw the entire Fediverse away. You go to a server that you like. I can't take my Twitter account somewhere else. So it's pros and cons. It's not one thing or the other. It's a variety, and it's all in the shades of gray. So if you have evidence that they're doing some sketchy stuff, go to a different server. Go to a different instance. If you're just like, well, anyone could do something sketchy, well, we have examples of Facebook and Twitter doing legit sketch, right? So you can't go anywhere else. You're stuck. You either continue supporting a site that's doing something sketch, or you don't, and you cancel your account. So I'm on more flexible options for consumers to choose who they do business with, but not sacrificing all of the work they've put into in building sort of a social media-y profile. Because if your frustration is, oh, they might do bad things, then you should never be on any social media. And you should cancel them all. You should turn off this Twitch stream. who owns Twitch? Twin Folk Tech, exactly. It's the great thing about Federation is there's no one single point of failure. You don't have to trust any one company. Jojo the Techie, I have not found a great one for the kind of tech YouTubery that we do. She asks, is there a Mastodon server for content creators? I chose mine because I thought it was going to be more content creator friendly, and it is, but it's content creator friendly for like more artistic distribution. Again, it's more like artists' art, not YouTuber content creation. I think for me, the closest I found to a server that does that well is techhub.social, which might be where I go. I don't know. So I would definitely just kind of shop around. Check out a couple servers, maybe go to a general purpose server. I know Mastodon.social is just kind of a wide open, whatever, casual conversation kind of server. But as long as you're on a server, you can then reach out to every other creator that you know and kind of build up your little network that way. Twinfolk, what Mastodon client are you using? I started with the official Mastodon app on Android, and that's garbage. Don't use that. I switched over to Tusky. Tusky has been a little bit better, but genuinely, like, it works really well in just a web browser, too. So if you bookmark, then you can just go to your bookmark on a web browser, and you actually have, like, a fully featured mobile experience there, too. It's not even a progressive web app. Just go to your mastodon.org/your username, log in there, and it's going to work just as well, maybe even better, depending on their server load. Two Turbo, that's a very good question, and I am not able to answer that. I wonder how expensive it would be to set up a server for tech journalism. Unfortunately, in the short term, I think we're all just going to have to piggyback on other servers until we can kind of figure out what that looks like. But again, the folks over at Twit have their own server, and I've been following a few of them just to see what they might decide to do. I can kind of use them as a model for where this could all go. And then if they have some positive experiences, or they can kind of show some momentum, I might consider trying to find some server space and investing in a platform to help content create. I don't know. We'll have to see. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on. All right. We actually technically just finished housekeeping. It's 9:46 in the AM. I'm going to take another drink of coffee because I'm running real dry here.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
One last. Gormlord says, if YouTube started doing a Twittery, bloggy type of thing, would you use it? And they do. And I do. And it's awful, but you can go to a YouTube community page. What YouTube had, or what Google had, was Google Plus, and that was amazing. And then they tried to staple it to YouTube, and that was terrible, and everyone hated it, and they were bad, and they should never have done that. But they tried to keep some vestige of it by doing YouTube community posts. So I still post occasionally they are not valuing that as part of their algorithm. For a while there, you could game YouTube community posts to get a ton of traffic. That was kind of the hook. Like, hey, we really want to focus on community posts. This is a way to kind of drive that engagement, keep people looking at YouTube videos. And then they pulled all of that. So, like, there's very little engagement, traditional engagement on community posts in the same way. So it is what it is. But, yeah, I mean, I posted it on YouTube today. There is a YouTube community post on youtube.com/JuanBagnell. Or youtube.com/@somegadgetguy, and it links to this Twitch stream, because Twitch is a better place to have this kind of conversation for me. So, Paul Puri gifted a tier 1 sub to KMK0, Al Zombino, Last Divine, 3 Suku, and 2 Turbo. Paul, man, thank you so much. That was huge. I really appreciate it. That's awesome. You guys have been rocking my socks, and just all of the support is really incredible. So I really do appreciate it. Our news blocks I've got a lot of actual news stories that we need to check in on. But the nice thing is that each of them are kind of follow-up stories, things that we've been talking about for a while. And we just want to kind of keep an eye on some of these events as they sort of unfold. So I'm gonna try not to spend a ton of time because I can't really go super, super over. This podcast is already going to run long, but I can't go crazy long, make this another 3-hour live stream. So I want to start off with some of our government and regulatory news, just because this is a positive step and it's something that you can contribute. And in fact, this is something I hope people in this live stream will share with a few of the people that they know that this might benefit. We've had the hardest time getting accurate data on broadband distribution. Under the last FCC, ISPs were allowed to self-report on what their service looked like, on how many customers they really served. That doesn't work for how we invest in future broadband rollout. So the FCC has started trying to redefine and redraw coverage maps, and now people can contribute directly. This is coming by way of John Brodkin over at Ars Technica. FCC unveils big update to broadband map and wants you to help correct errors. All of the links, all of the stories, all of the housekeeping, everything we're going to be talking about is going to be on the show notes for this week's episode. I very regularly ask you to check out somegadgetguy.com to hit those links. I'm asking you specifically on this one to read through what the FCC is doing and click on the FCC link so that you can also contribute your data to this project. We cannot have the next phase of fiber to home, 5G, fixed wireless, satellite. We don't know where to spend money on making those services better unless we tell the FCC directly. We can't leave it up to the ISPs. We can't leave it up to the cell phone carriers. We are woefully underserved for how much money we spend. The only way to fix that is to contribute directly to the agency that is going to be responsible for funneling money into broadband distribution. Only you can prevent broadband blackouts. You have to do, I already have. It's not on me anymore. I've already put in all of my data for what kind of coverage I have access to. I'm done. I'm good. I've done my part. I'm very angry that across the street there is fiber and I do not have fiber here. So I'm trying to fix that. You can encourage people around you to go to an FCC website and put in some information, and then money will be spent to hopefully better help people that are also underserved. So, Ars Technica, doing the good work. John Brodkin's coverage on government regulations and tech politics has always been outstanding. Oh, you jerk. I am not making this podcast another Elon Musk rant, but Soar Hunter, just give money to Starlink. What could go wrong? Oh, no, that's bad. The link for that will be there, but you can also go to the FCC website. Participate, because if you don't participate, you don't get the money. I'm trying to make sure you guys get hooked up. It's better for you if you participate. Just as another follow-up story, this was a thread at MiskCo. I'm definitely mispronouncing that Twitter handle. Doing another deep dive analysis on Apple's App Store ID and data tracking. The top level tweet of this thread, Apple's analytics data include an ID called DSLD. We were able to verify that DSLD is the Directory Services Identifier, an ID that uniquely identifies an iCloud account, meaning Apple's analytics can personally identify you. So the company that went out of their way to hurt Facebook so that they could start up their own ad business, they didn't want Facebook as a competitor, and they get $10 to $12 billion a year from Google for your search data, is also in the business of tracking and monetizing your behavior. And now it's become an even bigger issue where Apple's marketing about, hey, your privacy and you're protected and all that. Well, Apple is also another singular point of failure. So if anything ever goes down, you do not have an air gap between your personal information and Apple servers, you've signed a terms of service and an end user licensing agreement that lets them profit off of your data. They sell this to marketing, to companies that advertise on their platforms. And if there's ever a compromise, it seems like it's pretty easy to link your behavior to your actual account. And as we've seen, a lot of consumers out there probably aren't super great about really doing their due diligence and protecting their iCloud accounts, celebrities included. So if someone was properly motivated to link your data to an iCloud account and try and compromise that account, you just have to really hope that Apple is super good at never, ever letting a security issue through, which we know there have been malware apps, you know, sort of let through onto the App Store. That's been a thing. We know that Safari browser data was leaky as sin at the beginning of the year. That was a thing. We know there have been numerous security exploits where Apple has just never detailed if there was a problem in the wild. Major iOS and iPadOS updates have gone through saying, hey, this is a huge exploit. This could have been terrible. It could have gained remote access to your devices. We're not going to tell you if it actually happened, because that would be bad for our image. So just another, you know, rules for thee, but not for me. Apple loves posturing like they're really helping you protect your data. At the same time, they're making a lot of money on advertising now off your data. So that's pretty great. Gary the Farman, privacy. It just works. Paul, with Google, you're the product. With Apple, wait, you're also the product. Not only are you also the product, you got to spend a lot more for the privilege of being the product on Apple than you do on Google. The average selling price of Androids is like $400. The average selling price of an iPhone is $8. Okay, cool story. Moving right along, this is just another one that I think is interesting. We build up all of this cool stuff. These tech companies profited insanely over the last 2 years, and coming out of a global pandemic where we're not leaning on tech in exactly the same way, these companies are still growing. Amazon is still making more money. Google is still making more money than they ever have before, but they're not making as much more money as they were during the peak of the pandemic. So just that market correction is causing stocks to plummet. If you've ever needed an excuse to hate capitalism and billionaires and people who invest heavily into these corporations, it's stuff like that. It's that Google made more money last quarter than they ever have before, but they missed their expectation by $900 million. They pulled in $58 billion, but they missed their expectation by under one of those billions. They made significantly more money quarter over quarter, year over year, than they did the year before, but not enough more money. They need more money. And that, to me, kind of makes me want to throw up in my mouth. As everybody keeps telling me, I'm supposed to get more conservative as I get older. That has not proven true with the way that we handle this tech stuff. So Amazon, similarly, there are some market corrections happening where people can go back to stores. Best Buy is doing actually pretty good right now because people feel more comfortable going into a Best Buy to do some shopping again. Well, Amazon is is not handling that transition very well, so some of their services are going to be gutted. So this is from Business Insider. Who wrote this up? Eugene Kim. Amazon is gutting its voice assistant Alexa. Employees describe a division in crisis and huge losses on a wasted opportunity. So one of the biggest platforms in IoT, home automation, it's kind of the backbone service for a whole bunch of people out there that like to do this type of assistant interaction with their home services. Apparently, Amazon is gutting that department. So whatever goes on with Amazon's assistant at this point, we don't know. This is something to keep an eye on, especially if you're heavily invested in the Alexa ecosystem. That's going to be frustrating. Why backpedal? Why pull support for, you know, Amazon Echo devices now? This is the wrong time. This is the time where you double down and you say, hey, you're going out again. And here, we've got all these partnerships with cameras and we do this and we do that. Set up all of those kiosks. You remember, I want to say it was like 2018-ish. Amazon would set up like this living room kiosk in like malls across the country. Malls are starting to get traffic again. We actually went to an outdoor mall and they've got like an indoor thing and people were really in there and shopping. Amazon is setting up all of these stores, like actual brick and mortar stores that they can use as distribution, but then people can really shop there. They have Whole Foods, set all of that up and triple down on an ecosystem of products. You've got Kindles and you've got tablets and you've got cameras and you've got robot vacuums and you've got these smart speakers and smart displays. Now is the time to show your community that you're invested. Now is the wrong time to cut funding to the department, the division that makes all this stuff. It's so frustrating. Oh, we got to tighten our belts. You're not going to make as much more money this quarter because we're not in a global pandemic anymore. So we got to lay off employees, got to make that line go up. And it's maddening because this is going to erode the future of that division, but we don't care because that's like three or four fiscal quarters away. Next fiscal quarter, we need to show value to our shareholders. So we're going to gut the business that will eventually pay off all of that investment. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. We need a serious and significant regulatory and market correction on this type of BS. Sorry, Mr. Malignance, I usually avoid Amazon. They don't need more money. TK Bay, I leave town for 1 week and Twitter and Alexa are paying for it. TK, what did you do? What did you do? We were at the MediaTek event and we were in the same time zone. So really, it seems whenever TK leaves his time zone, bad things happen across the wasteland of the internet. TK, what did you do? So now we need to set up like a stock alert for people who are like hardcore day traders. Is TK Bay in his zip code? If he is not in his time zone, beware of risky investments. I love it. And so we can finally wrap up our news blog here. I'm bringing this up because it's frustrating how our government and our politics get hyper-focused. So someone was asking if we'd gotten to the Ticketmaster story yet or the Taylor Swift concert fiasco here. Let me get this out of the way. Right there. Okay. So this is direct from Reuters. Reporting by Diane Bartz and Chris Reese, U.S. opens antitrust probe into Ticketmaster. The U.S. Justice Department has opened an antitrust investigation into Ticketmaster's owner, Live Nation Entertainment. The New York Times reported on Friday after the company's sale of Taylor Swift concert tickets this week overwhelmed its website. This is something that I've brought up a couple times in the past. When you have kind of a monopoly in a business space, it's almost always bad for consumers. There is no other direct-to-consumer concert ticket selling apparatus that can directly compete against the juggernaut that is Ticketmaster. So that's bad. The highlight of this is Ticketmaster crashed and burned so badly on one of the most anticipated concert tours of the year. Taylor Swift has been very public about it. She's posted several times on various social media and in news. She's been quoted in articles and on coverage of this story. She doesn't have any direct control. She is sort of beholden to the mechanisms of Ticketmaster. She is going to be touring so aggressively and in such large audience quantities, that was really clumsy, she can't make a website that would fulfill all of that demand. So she reaches out to Ticketmaster and she says, hey, can you handle this? Do you know how much interest in how much traffic this is going to get. And Ticketmaster says, yeah, sure. And then they go live, and then the entire thing is a poop show. We can't let something like that continue. So we do need to look into how does Ticketmaster get so big that there is no competition, that there is no other resource or outlet. Why is this allowed to happen? I completely agree with the antitrust investigation, because if we could break up Ticketmaster, or we could allow for competition in this space, or we could deliver better tools to concert venues that they could handle more of this on their own back end. I mean, this is an infrastructure issue. It's a data connectivity issue. It's a broadband distribution issue. All of these things fit together. All of the problems that lead up to one company that can push out competition is bad. Why do we only single out concert tickets? I have never understood. We get to the thing, you're like, hey, you know what? Scalping is bad. There are laws in most states, and I believe there are federal laws against concert ticket scalping. Scalping of everything? No. No, no. Concert ticket scalping. Our federal government has said, you know what? Concert ticket scalping is bad. Well, we went through 2 years of global pandemic where people couldn't buy PlayStations, people couldn't buy new laptops, people couldn't buy desktops, people couldn't buy components like GPUs. And then you would go on eBay and you would see all of these people ratcheting up prices to take advantage of other folks in desperate situations who really needed that hardware. But our governments have gotten on board. Concert ticket scalping, that's bad. Scalping in general, oh, I don't know, there's just nothing we can do. But concert tickets, that's where we've got to do some investigation. A concert ticket monopoly, oh, well, that's bad because a lot of people made noise about Taylor Swift. But a monopolistic business practice in regards to the cell phone industry, carrier industry, ISP, broadband, distribution, other products, well, there's just nothing we can do about that. Monopolies are fine everywhere else, but concert tickets. Now we look like we're doing something. This is performative government at its finest. Now we're really going after those evil concert ticket scalpers and those evil ticket masters, and we're going to make that all much better now. Every other part of your life is going to be just completely crushed under the boot heel of a rigged economy. But we fixed the Taylor Swift concert problem. Dave Burns. But public infrastructure is bad, Juan. Sore Hunter, nationalized Ticketmaster. Uncle Sam should run it. I love it. McCorcoran 3, $2,000 to see Blink 182. Could you imagine? They are notoriously poopy live. Man. Well, and so McCorcoran 3, yeah, could you imagine if Sony just started charging $2,000 for PlayStations and called it dynamic pricing? And I don't want to call out NVIDIA, but we saw significant increases in prices generationally on NVIDIA, going from the beginning of the 30 series to the Ti refreshes of the 30 series to now the 40 series. NVIDIA saw, hey, the market is sort of surviving this inflated pricing because of scalpers, so we can pad that pricing directly. And that's what happens when we have this kind of rigged, locked consumer relationship. The problem is, oh, regulations are bad. No, regulations probably would have helped offset some of this price and consumer gouging. Go to your grocery store and look at all of the inflated prices for your food. Then go and look at the financial statements of all the major grocery chains and how they've never made more money than they have over the last year. And then look at how grocery store chains are merging. They're acquiring each other, and you're having fewer and fewer competitive advantages when they're all owned under the same umbrellas. That is monopolistic business practice. That is very similar to Ticketmaster. But we're really upset about Taylor Swift's concert. We're not actually going after the exact same business practice that allowed Ticketmaster to become this behemoth with our grocery stores. It's the same thing. It's even worse because I can choose not to go to a Taylor Swift concert. My options get a bit dicier if I choose not to eat. I mean, again, it's like, man, I've got a good competitive advantage where I can kind of just hop the hill and go to Trader Joe's, and we haven't seen as much price ratcheting at Trader Joe's, but it's getting gross out there for the indie supermarkets as well. It's really, really gross. DTNL, can someone just simplify the whole situation for me? Capitalism bad. Or I should say, unchecked, unregulated, late-stage capitalism hurts you. I guess is the last way to kind of wrap it all up. I didn't mute my mic. Apologies. You just heard me slurp coffee. So that's going to do it for the news block. I almost caught up. It's 10:09 in the a.m. I'm feeling real good about that, considering housekeeping took 45 minutes. Oh, man, it's so bad. Every podcast has a subreddit. My subreddit is no exception. My subreddit is focused on trying to help people share content they feel deserves more attention. The subreddit I run is not a me subreddit, but wouldn't you know it, I had two really solid videos this week. So I did take the top spots on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. The mission of this site, as always, and especially because, you know, hey, we're all looking at kind of managing our Twitter use, is to share content you feel deserves more attention. If you go to youtube.com, you're going to get a heavily algorithmically influenced lineup of videos. YouTube is not serving you what you want to see. YouTube is serving you what it knows will keep you on YouTube longer. But that means you miss out on a wide variety of content creators that are making incredible videos, really kind of broadening out this tech discussion and not just highlighting the most tentpole popular kinds of tech videos. So, YouTube.com bad, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles good. And you can submit articles and editorials and video. It doesn't have to be videos. It can be anything that's sort of in the tech conversation or in the tech zeitgeist. Share it. We've even had some photos just become really popular on this little subreddit. But really, it's, do you think it deserves more attention than it's currently getting? Help out. Contribute and participate. So at the top of the subreddit, number one, my Xperia versus Pixel video, which should kind of tell you something when an Xperia video this late into the year is pulling some good traffic, that maybe there's some potential for conversations outside of just, well, here will be the best Black Friday deals and sales and affiliate links. You know, it's pretty great. Number two, my SOC showdown. I was really stoked about this. I didn't think this video would do very well at all. And it's what we're going to be talking about here in the gadget block, comparing the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 against the Dimensity 9200 against the Tensor 2. I was really stoked. That one really made me happy. And then number three, this one also kind of rocked my socks. Ryan Thomas, OnePlus 8 Pro review 2 years later, still a beast. Now, I know a lot of nerds out there are going to say OnePlus hasn't made a great phone since the OnePlus 7 Pro. Those nerds are wrong. The OnePlus 8 Pro was a monster performer, and it brought OnePlus into an astoundingly good position for photography and video capabilities. The OnePlus 9, I think, is the high watermark. I think OnePlus 9 Pro is the best phone OnePlus has ever made. And the OnePlus 10 Pro is good, but the OnePlus 9 Pro is better. And especially now that the OnePluses all got... Hold on, let me just make sure that camera is still on. I haven't even cut to the other camera. Just cutting to the OnePlus 8 Pro, OnePlus 9 Pro, OnePlus 10 Pro, and the Vivo 9 Pro. These are some phenomenally good phones. I just feel like OnePlus 9 Pro is peak OnePlus. That phone is awesome. It's really good. And now that they all kind of got Android 13 at the same time, like they all got updated together, which doesn't really happen on Samsungs. You don't go back to previous generations and see those types of updates. And Barry Johnson again with the assist. I love it. OnePlus 9, $299, and OnePlus 9 Pro, $399. $400 for a OnePlus 9 Pro. You're trading some of the longer term software support, but that hardware is baller. And especially if you've ever played with shooting 4K 120 video, oh man, it's really good. All my family videos now are being shot 4K 120. It's kind of awesome. Dave Burns, but 865 bad though. 865 not good enough. I love it because in one breath, nerds will be like, oh, but the Snapdragon 870 in this Poco phone is the best price to performance. And then you show like, yeah, well, here's a $400 OnePlus 9 Pro. Oh, it's not good enough because OnePlus and Oxygen OS kicked my dog. I'm going to say it here too, because we are going to check out some of these Android 13 updates. I'm happy the old Oxygen OS is dead. Kill it with fire. It was not good. It was laggier in performance. It was terrible for the camera. And the only thing we're missing were some of the fun little like customization options. I'm glad Oxygen OS is dead. I'm happy. I really like what this new setup is doing. There are some teething pains. We definitely have to sort that out in just some future bullet point updates. I'm glad we moved on. It's better now, and I like that it's better. It gets got so pissy there. Oh, and Barry Johnson, 4K 120, chef's kiss, as El Jefe would say. Absolutely. Slow down 4K 120. Shoot 4K 120. Throw it into LumaFusion on the phone that shot the 4K 120, and you can slow it down to a 1/5 speed for a finished product at 24 frames per second. And you want to talk, hey, how do you shoot cinematic video from your phone? Do that. That is immediately dramatic and cinematic. I'm just doing silly things like, here's my daughter running at a zoo. Okay, well, that looks like your daughter running at a zoo in real time, but then you slow it down to 1/5 speed and you throw like some really cool like girl alternative rock behind it, and now you've got a moment and it's awesome. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I took the top two spots. I'm really happy. Rounding out the top five, we've got an article talking about some new games coming to Android. We've got Shane Craig, Scary If Literal, talking about video editing software on the Surface Duo 2. Through the top 10, we've got Tech Potato doing a video on IBM machine learning. We've got another Ryan Thompson talking about repairable laptops. It was a really solid week for the subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Really, really good. Yeah, Twinfolk, I love this. I love this so much. Twinfolk is saying, yeah, the Oppoification of OnePlus has been great for me. I've loved it. It's been better. It's been better. It's been a little less familiar, but the phones have been running better, performing better. The cameras have definitely been stepping up. The shutter lag has vanished. Everything that used to irk me about old Oxygen OS, light years better. With this sort of backbone being Color OS, I don't miss it. I don't miss Oxygen. Oxygen was kind of lame. So again, if you're one of those folks, and I feel bad for you if you are, but if you're one of those folks out there saying, oh, but the OnePlus 7 Pro and the Periscope camera, that was best. Get on board. Catch up. Because things are happening and you're kind of missing it. Because this stuff is pretty sweet. It's pretty good.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people. Producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay, either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions. And of course, any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos. But if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
Oh, Septian. Everyone drop an F in chat for Sep. Oh, Sep dog. Oh, Juan, be quiet. I already sold my OnePlus 9 Pro. Oh, you sold probably the best phone that OnePlus has ever made. I'm sorry, bud. That kind of sucks. A DTNL. Dave Burns, absolutely. F's in the chat. Correct. Dustin Adore, Sore Hunter, F. It's F's all the way down, man. I'm sorry. The OnePlus 9 Pro is so stinking good. It is such a great phone. And it really did not get the attention and the respect that it deserved. A bunch of techies were turning OnePlus into the next LG. Did you notice that? LG left the phone market, and suddenly OnePlus went from the darling enthusiast brand to, oh, they just can't do anything right. And these phones are so expensive now, even though they were cheaper than like Samsung and iPhone counterparts and offered better capabilities like 8K 30 video performance or 4K 120 for the video, faster shutter speeds without that lag than what Samsung was offering, more consistent performance in gaming. All of that was better. All of that was better on the OnePlus 9 than the Galaxy S21. But you had a whole bunch of people going, oh, if you want a good Samsung, you need to buy the Galaxy. And you're like, that's garbage. That was hot garbage. You put a OnePlus 9 Pro up against an S22 Plus, and the OnePlus 9 Pro will wipe the floor with that Samsung every single time. The only thing the Samsung has on it is DeX, but the performance on the S22 Plus, not as good, because Samsung throttled it bad and put in cheap hardware to manage the thermals. So the phone, even without the game optimization service, can't run at the same sustained performance. So your S22 Plus will not keep up with a OnePlus 9 Pro. I love it. I love it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Sore Hunter, it's a different phone, though. The second thing Samsung has is a stylus phone. The Note is a completely different animal than the S. So I like to hold up, the S22 Plus was an MSRP $999 phone. That phone is garbage around its MSRP. If you can get a good deal on it, I guess, but the performance is crap. The battery life is not good. I believe there is still a class action lawsuit against Samsung in South Korea that they could not deliver. The Note 22 is a totally different animal. There is no DNA shared between the S22 and the Note 22. It's almost market manipulation. It's almost consumer miseducation to call them both S series phones. The Ultra has a better display, has better cameras, has a digitizer, has the S Pen, and is built better to properly cool the phone. So the performance is significantly better. They should never have been called S phones together. You have an S22 and an S22 Plus where Samsung went cheap and made garbage phones, and they charged you a lot of money for it. You have the Note 22, which is one of the best phones of the year. They are not the same thing. There is not one shared component between either of those tiers of devices. And Samsung is definitely due some kind of market correction on how they play those kinds of games with their consumers. Because they seeded the S22 Ultra to all these reviewers to talk about how good the S22 is. And then consumers will go, oh, hey, I've heard of an S22. Let me go, oh, you know, I can get an inexpensive S22 at my carrier. I don't need to spend $1,100. I can spend $800. That's great. It'll reduce my monthly bill. Those phones have nothing to do with each other. Not a shred. Not a piece, not a component. Terrible. And again, you could have gotten a OnePlus 9 Pro, not even the OnePlus 10 Pro. I'm going to say the OnePlus 9 Pro would have cleaned the clock of that S22 Plus. And it's got Android 13, so we're going to take a look at that in just a bit. Sorry, it's a trigger. That's a trigger warning for one. Oh, and JoJo the Techie is correct. There is no such thing as a flagship phone in the way that techies talk about it. So we don't really use the word flagship here. We talk about what the phone is built to do. I don't really care if it's supposed to be a showpiece. I don't review fancy purses. If you just want to spend a whole bunch of money on something to show people that you spent a whole bunch of money on something, talk about flagships. You can go talk about flagships on any other channel. I talk about price to performance and performance per watt. So you can spend a lot of money on a device that does a lot, or you can spend a little money on something that covers the basics. That's it. You got entry level, mid-tier, premium, and ultra. And those are the four price categories that I talk about. That's all we really need to care about. All right. So, how do I want to transition this over? So I do want to spend just a minute. Oh, no, I forgot to pull up the site. I need to get the Qualcomm announcement. Who here is excited for the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2? Drop a 1 in chat while I loudly type on my workstation here. If you're excited to see what might be coming from Qualcomm for premium tier phones, Snapdragon 8 Gen 2. Let's see. Dave Burns is dropping a 2. Two turbos dropping a 2. Dusta Dory's dropping a 37. Aditya Anil's dropping a 5. Ron Guido, J-Man, TK Bay, they're excited for HN2. TK Bay just got back from covering all this stuff. I'm going to say that J-Man is excited because he dropped a 1111111111. So I'm going to take each of those as individual ones and not like 11,111,111,000. So that he's multiply excited, he's not making a joke out of dropping a 1 in chat. That's what I'm going to say. Ted is saying he's more excited for MediaTek and Pixel. Gary the Fireman is saying Team Tensor. Barry Johnson dropping a 1 in chat. Okay, so I am critically very anxious, but I am very excited to see what's coming down from Qualcomm, from MediaTek, and from Google. I believe for the first time in... Oh, sorry, I've got something loading here. Let me get rid of that. Ooh, that was bad. Here, I'm going to pull this up just so I have like my face in a thumbnail. I am very excited for 2023, where for the first time in almost 3 years, I feel companies are finally taking a step back to look at more refined performance, better performance per watt, better battery life. These are the wins. And I think 2023, if what these companies say is true and what I've gotten to go hands-on with, what I've gotten to play with, yes, we're going to have some crazy powerful devices. If something has an HN2 or a Dimensity 9200 or a Tensor, you are talking one of the smallest market segments in Android. We know overwhelmingly consumers are buying $400 and below. That's the hottest section of Android. And it's like a factor over 10 to 1 of any other price tier. It's in that sort of lower mid-range. Those are huge purchases for people internationally. That's where we're seeing, I think, some of the hottest growth and adoption of 5G radios in mobile devices. So when we get to, you know, hold up these phones that are like $1,000, this is a tiny segment. This is 1/10 of the segment of what the mainstream purchasing bell curve really looks like. So it's the stupidest thing ever to take that $1,000 phone and talk about, oh, average consumers just do basic things. That's stupid. We've got to stop doing that. When we show this off and we're showing off these premium tier SoCs, these MediaTeks, these Tensors, these Snapdragons that are going to be going into the upper mid-range and the premium tier and the ultra premium tier, we're talking about laptop grade computing. These are legitimately more powerful and an order of magnitude more powerful than what's going to go into the next generation of student grade laptops and Chromebooks. TK and Ricky, while we were at the MediaTek Summit, Ricky, the YouTube tech guy, also joined us for Best of Our Week. There's a whole new generation of like Chromebook SoCs that are going to be going out. Chromebook on ARM is really hot, and that's going to be a growth segment. These are really inexpensive, bread and butter, daily driver kinds of laptop experiences. The chips that are going into those Chromebooks, what people will rely on as a computing platform in their homes and in their schools, are roughly the same tier of power as something like a Snapdragon 480. The lowest tier Snapdragon phone SoC is what's going to be going into a significant population of student and home laptop Chromebooks and low power Windows on ARM devices. You cannot tell me if a huge bulk of consumers are using that tier of compute power, that having a phone with an 8 Gen 2 isn't a radically more powerful compute device that should be able to replace like a home desktop. Like, you should be able to do that. It shouldn't even be a question. I've got people in my comments like, oh, but if you have like a Snapdragon 855, that's way too old. A Snapdragon 855 is multiple orders of magnitude more powerful than what's going to be going into the brand new, newest entry-level and even mid-tier Chromebooks. Like, it's just not even close. So that was all a rambling preamble to get to this just part of the showdown. And again, what I explain far more eloquently because I'm reading a script in this video, comparing 8 Gen 2 to Dimensity 9200 to Tensor 2, what we're going to see is a division of focus and performance. I want to start with the Dimensity. The Dimensity is the most forward-thinking of the three. So the core configuration, the CPU core configuration, MediaTek is taking a step to say, hey, at this premium tier, we're going to drop support for legacy 32-bit software. If you're spending $600, $800, $1,000 on a phone, if we remove 32-bit support and focus only on 64-bit OS, 64-bit applications, we can eke out even another like 5% performance advantage and reduce battery life another like 5%. So it's like kind of a double win. You know, you can run the chip a little harder or you can save a little bit more battery life. And most of the applications that people are likely to install on Android have now all started migrating to 64-bit. I mean, the support for 64-bit applications came years ago. It's only been with the Pixel 7 that we see a company actually lock that down and say 64-bit only on this phone. So the Pixel, where did my Pixel go? Oh, it's right here. So the Pixel 7 Pro only supports 64-bit applications. It no longer supports 32-bit applications, even though the operating system itself and the hardware isn't 64-bit exclusive. MediaTek is going to 64-bit exclusive. But that's an opportunity for Qualcomm. Qualcomm is keeping two of the medium performance cores in the phone. They're going to be backwards compatible with 32-bit applications, and we need to see, is that going to cause some difference in performance, in metrics, in thermals? To get into the core counts, all of these phones are going to have eight. They're octa-core CPUs. but how you make 8 cores happen changes significantly between all three of these platforms. And then lastly, Google with the Tensor 2. The Tensor 2 is already here. It's already out, but it's going to be the chip that takes us into 2023. And it's a very different CPU core configuration from the other two. So this has some huge differences in how these devices handle compute tasks. I think Dimensity is likely going to carry the CPU win going into 2023. I think Snapdragon is going to take the gaming win going into 2023. And I think Google is going to take the AI win, the machine learning win going into 2023. So you really, we have three stunningly complete platforms that each have a different focus and they're trying to do different things. And they all have different strengths and weaknesses. And I think this is going to be an amazing trio to pit against each other. Right now, the best assistant, image manipulation, sort of computational machine learning stuff, Google is going to be really tough to beat. They are very good at making little compute cores to handle these automated phone call, social media, messaging kinds of tasks. And Tensor is just remarkable for that. And it's also very good at chewing up photos and videos. So again, right now, if you want the absolute fastest video rendering performance, it's not on an iPhone. LumaFusion has been brilliantly optimized for iPhones for years. And if you want to cut up 4K video, the absolute fastest device to get you through editing and rendering a 4K video is the Pixel 7 Pro. It's the winner because Google is very good at that. Geekbench scores don't matter. Antutu can't predict that. You pick up an iPhone, you put a 4K video in it. You pick up a Pixel, you put a 4K video in it. You push render, the Pixel is going to win. And it, along the way, it's also going to stomp the crap out of the 8 Plus Gen 1. Oh, that's a great point, McCorkran. Yeah, I just want to highlight that. If anyone has an iPhone XR laying around, you can trade it into Best Buy and get a Pixel 7 for $40. And the Tensor 2 is absolutely going to murk an iPhone XR. It's not gonna be close. This is the exciting part too, where Google can now have a little bit more control over their ecosystem. And I think 5 years of security updates is right online. I do not care about 5 years of operating system updates. Operating systems change too much over the course of mobile software development that you don't get the best experience when you're into year four, aging battery, phone is starting to slow down, and then you slap on a significantly different operating system than when that chip launched. But 5 years of security patches should be mandatory. Like, that's write your senators, write your House of Representatives, write your Congress member. We need that as a consumer protection. You should have multiple years of security and bug fixing. I don't really care about the OS as much. So Dimensity, I think, is going to take the CPU win. The Dimensity 9000 last year was an incredible performance per watt platform, and the 8 Plus Gen 1 largely caught up to it at the end of the year. But what they're talking about in terms of optimizing for future software, I think, is going to have a tangible impact on kind of streamlining what is a little kludgy in the Android ecosystem. Flip side of that is Qualcomm has all of the momentum right now for GPU performance. So I think benchmarking scores, the Dimensity is going to win. But then in practical nuts and bolts gaming, I'll be shocked if the 8 Gen 2 doesn't arrive as the gaming premier solution. Right now, I mean, I'm playing with the Steam Deck. I adore the Steam Deck. Your performance per watt on a Snapdragon chip with like a good clip-on controller, like I've got my GameSir, like even without running the cooling fan, but just using an 8 Plus Gen 1, what I can play on an Android phone versus what I can play on my Steam Deck, my battery life is better. If I'm comparing the same games, my battery life is better and the performance can ratchet up to insanely high frame rates. Like, if you've played Undead Horde at 100 frames per second, it looks real good. Where I tap out at 60 FPS on my Steam Deck. So that kind of back and forth, it's that nuance. If you're looking at something that's going to be a little bit more fun, gaming, that kind of media consumption, I think you probably want to veer Snapdragon. If you're looking at things that are a little more CPU, compute heavy, tasks, productivity, documents, compression, file compression scores are probably going to be really good too. Using your phone a little bit more like a PC, I think Dimensity is probably going to take that first half win. And then if you want to use your phone more as a phone, like it's a personal assistant, it's screening your calls and doing the best speech to text transcription, Tensor. Tensor is just a phenomenal solution that also comes with the perk of being really good at managing and manipulating media. So it's good. I haven't really been this excited for the chips in our phones for a couple years. The Snapdragon 855 was such a glorious high watermark. It was such a brilliant combination of performance and battery life. And the 865 is very good, but it was a challenge making that transition for pricing at the time. It was a challenge making that transition for pricing because of what Qualcomm did with their modem. Remember, we had to pull the modem off of the SoC, so we got a chip that performed really well, but prices jumped because it was like this separate component purchase if you wanted to have a good LTE radio. And actually, I think LTE performance kind of suffered going from the 855 to the 865. The 888 was a step in a direction that we didn't really like for performance and performance per watt. The 8 Gen 1 is going to be a dark mark in the history of SoC design. A lot of people are going to compare it to like the Snapdragon 810 that killed LG phones, caused them all to boot loop. I don't think it's going to be practically that bad, but it's going to be remembered very poorly. So 2023, not only do we have what looks like a better performer from Qualcomm, the 8 Gen 2 looks like it's going to be really good, but it's joined by a really solid alternative from Google and a very bleeding edge competitor from MediaTek. Any of us that are looking at shopping premium tier phones next year, we actually have some tough choices to make because each of these are going to have very unique strengths and weaknesses, and none of that is going to be reflected by a Geekbench score. Again, I've showed it so many times now, but if I put my Tensor 2 Pixel 7 against my 8 Plus Gen 1 Xiaomi 12S Ultra, the Geekbench scores are 30% higher on the Xiaomi. Like, it should not be close. Nothing that phone does should ever face any type of pressure from a Tensor. If a Geekbench score can help us predict real-world performance, everything should be better on the Xiaomi. It is 30% better at Geekbench. And then I run LumaFusion, and wouldn't you know it, my Pixel 7 Pro is roughly 30% faster at rendering 4K video than my Xiaomi 12S Ultra. So it's almost exactly the opposite. If you relied on Geekbench to help inform a purchasing decision, you very likely have not bought the right solution for your needs. You want to do fun little videos on TikTok, you want to edit up some product or some packaging videos, you just want to cut family videos on the go? Geekbench steered you wrong. Geekbench radically misrepresented the performance of what these phones could really do when you put an actual task in front of them. And next year, it's going to be even more divisive. I think the split is going to be even farther. So what these Geekbench scores represent is going to be even less reflective of real world use. Sorry, I'm going to take another drink. Ted, 810 killed HTC and LG tried to pivot with the SD808 and Motorola did the same. Yeah, it was not a good year. Not great. Aditya NL, actually only use Geekbench as an app one. My use of the phone is restricted to toggling the test on and off, and my labor is paid for in cans of Mountain Dew and $1.50 hot dogs from Costco. That's hilarious. I maybe made a Costco hot dog run this weekend. It's like $1.50 and it's a hot dog and a soda, and I just love it. It's like, and it's also it's one of the best hot dogs you can just go buy. It's such a good hot dog. Dave Burns, Steam Deck is the most powerful, efficient x86 gaming can get. Completely agree. And that little AMD chipset is rad, but it is a PC. It is packing an entire little mini PC into a handheld portable. And if we know anything about x86 versus ARM, your performance per watt on ARM is so good. I mean, it's just stunning. I mean, what you can really do from a phone now in terms of practical nuts and bolts compute work is absolutely insane. And really, time and time and time again, what's really holding us back is more just developers taking phones more seriously. And increasingly, I'm worried that we've kind of lost the hearts and minds of people. Like, well, it's a smartphone and it just does phone things. And Apple says that if I want to do other things, I need a tablet. And if I don't want to do just tablet things, then I need to buy a MacBook. And so if I have a phone and a tablet and a MacBook, I can do all the things. And like, you could have done all the things from a phone. If the phone is as powerful as Apple's unlabeled bar graphs are telling you it is, which it's not, you should have been able to just get a phone. And your phone could have been your computer. The amount of compute work that you are saying you need to do easily could have been handled by your phone. If you can give me charge separation and a little thermoelectric cooling pad, like I've got my GameSir, there's a pad right here. I put the phone on this and a little cold plate keeps it running more efficiently and more consistently. There's a little fan. That could be someone's desktop PC and you would be cutting 4K video and rendering almost as quickly as I can on my beefy Threadripper with a 2080 Ti. My foot race on LumaFusion on a Pixel 7 Pro is really close if I'm rendering the same project in DaVinci Resolve versus LumaFusion for the same kinds of cuts, edits, transitions, watermark, and soundtrack. It's real close. I could probably retire this workstation and arrive at roughly the same production quality that I'm currently producing. It's so insane. That's what our phones are capable of doing. And yet we've got a whole army of techies that are like, no, it's not good enough. I have this one obscure x86 program, and so no one should ever buy anything different than what I need to get my work done. So who wants to talk Android 13? My voice is starting to really fuzz out, so I'm going to take another drink of water here. But in the chat, I've got a whole stack of phones over here, and I feel like there is a remarkable difference between two cousins, the Vivo 9 Pro and the OnePlus 10 Pro, are very similar devices built from a very similar bucket of parts, and yet I think we can see some very clear and tangible differences between the two. If anyone would be interested in that, you know, just kind of let me know if Android 13 is something that's kind of on your radar for tech chattery. Aditya Nil would like to talk about Android 13. Shall I go over to side camera? I'm very bad at doing this kind of managed transition to talk about different devices. But here I can do this. And look, there are phones on this table here. So that's kind of cool. Oh, I just need to move my monitor so I can still see the chat. All the things you don't take into consideration when you don't do multi-camera very often. But yeah, so like I've got a OnePlus 10, I've got a OnePlus 8, I've got a OnePlus 9, I've got this really beautiful Vivo 9 Pro. This is still like one of my favorite phones of 2022, and I just shocking how we don't get these types of phones here in America. But then I also do have the Pixel here too, because I think it's kind of interesting to look at what the Pixel does well. This is, you know, Android 13, and you can see like the big bubbles. So you pull down your notification shade, you get these huge toggles. It's a list of like 8 individual toggles and a little bar at the top. This is material design Google. This is what they're putting on the Pixel. It's very big. It's very bubbly. And to me, it looks a little like Elcars. Like a Google engineer has been watching way too much Star Trek. And they thought, hey, you know, we could make something that legit looks like a Star Trek computer. I'm getting that kind of sense. I'm getting that kind of vibe. So I just wanted to show this off. It would help if I had these phones on. on and unlocked. So I just rebooted that. I got like a little schmutz on the screen. And if we're looking at the Vivo 9 Pro, this is now running Android 13. And there's very little to suggest that Android 13 is on this, except I will say animations seem a bit more fluid, but I always hate doing that when I'm a reviewer or, you know, when you're in a forum or on a subreddit and someone's like, yeah, I just got the new update. It runs so much sleeker and smoother now. The update is just running so smooth. I guess. you know what I mean, though? It's like, people say like the update is running better, but it's just sort of that it's new and fresh and everyone's excited that they got an update. So the 9 Pro, when you boot it up after installing Android 13, you just get the little Android notification, oh, your update has been completed. And there's very little that's functionally different. So the Vivo 9 Pro is running a flavor of Android called FunTouch. And when you pull your notification shade, you still see the old little bubbles. So there are 12 icons in my notification shade, as opposed to 8 icons on my Pixel. They have my favorite version of the brightness slider, where you, in the notification shade, can toggle auto brightness. It kills me. It's one of the things that is most lacking on the Pixel, is I want to be able to turn on auto brightness from my notification shade and not have to go into the phone settings. But then going into the phone settings, it's exactly like it was on Android 12. All of the customizations, all of the differences, the skin that's applied, Vivo calls this Fun Touch, but it's actually one of the least fun skins on a smartphone today. It is actually one of the more straightforward Android skins that's available today. Even into your multitasking view, you get very simple buttons and toggles just to like close out running apps. This is actually a little stark, but it feels like Android 11. It doesn't feel like Android 12 material design. It definitely doesn't feel like Android 13 in Pixel design. This is very minimalistic. It is buttery smooth. It is lightning quick. It is hyper responsive. This is a performance platform, and it kind of gets out of your way. So by comparison, I want to show, actually, let me see if I can show this on the OnePlus 10. I'm going to leave that right there. Hold on one second. I just got to cough, and I don't want to cough on the mic.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Oh, Bray Gray, I'm really happy to hear that. Bray says, as a UX designer, this is the stuff that fascinates me, lol. I love getting into this stuff, but I am not learned enough to really contribute well. So we have Android 13 on the OnePlus 8 Pro, the OnePlus 9 Pro, which is the best phone that OnePlus has ever made. But I want to show this off on the OnePlus 10 Pro, as that's the current phone, which would go up against the iQ. The iQ 9 Pro and the OnePlus 10 Pro are cousins. They share a lot of tech guts. The OnePlus 9 Pro and the OnePlus 10 Pro is just what we get here in the United States. But now we have this newest version of what they're calling Oxygen, but it's not. We know it's not really the old Oxygen OS. The old Oxygen OS was garbage and no one should like it. So, I'm going to log in. I don't want everybody to see my super secret PIN. My PIN number. So, on the Vivo, you upgrade to Android 13 and it just takes you into your phone. On the OnePlus, now we get, hello, your system has been updated. Some agreements and statements vary slightly from those in the previous version. Please read and agree to them. So this is a little Apple-y, the way that it greets you with re-signing your end-user licensing agreement and getting back into the phone. J-Man, that's hilarious. That's the same code I use on my luggage. 1, 2, 3, 4. So hold on, let me hit next. So no legal information, I'm going to agree to the user agreement. I'm going to see user privacy, security, and protection. But these optional, the user experience program and the stability improvement program, I'm going to say, no, you don't have to send my data to OnePlus. If something crashes, I'll send in a bug report. I do that, but I don't want you just siphoning data directly out. So I'm going to hit next. Now Oxygen OS, get started. We're going to get started, and it takes us into our home screen. And again, we don't see a whole lot that's functionally different here. But this is using a new animation engine. I forget what OnePlus has called it, but I'll pull up the OnePlus update notes. We can kind of talk through that. Again, super fluid. This actually kind of functions a little bit like that Vivo, like the iQ 9 Pro. I don't have to worry about cloning a device. This is super sleek, it's buttery smooth, and these animations are cranked to the maximum. I really believe a lot of Android phones don't fully sustain 60 frame per second animations, and now OnePlus is doing transitions in animations that I think better complement 120 frames per second. It's the one thing I loved, because I've already been using this on the OnePlus 9 Pro. When you flick up your app drawer, the momentum of how the app drawer scrolls feels different in how it responds to where your finger is actually moving on the device. It's really nice. It is very clean. It is very sleek. But when I was going through the iQ settings, nothing looked any different. I want to show here, now our notification shade is a lot different. So the notification shade on the OnePlus 10 Pro, it pulls lower. So you go through your notifications, then you pull again, and we still have the smaller little bubble toggles for, you know, like controlling your Bluetooth or firing your flashlight. There's still the little circles, and we still have auto control. Come on. Oh, do we not still have? I thought we still had auto control. So the brightness doesn't seem to actually have auto control. Maybe it's different on the OnePlus 9. I thought I still had it. Anyway. Sorry, I got distracted. When you control the brightness, I do like that it throws you back to your home screen so you can see how bright your screen really is. But the little toggles are still little circles. We still have 12 icons, not 8 like we have on the Pixel. But above that, we have a larger bubble icon for Wi-Fi. We have a larger bubble icon for the SIM card. I don't have my SIM in the OnePlus 10 Pro. This is a nice upgrade over Android 12 because I hate how Android 12 lumped together Wi-Fi and your cell phone data. So OnePlus has split those apart. So now you can control your Wi-Fi separate of your SIM card. You don't tap on one, then go in and tap on your Wi-Fi. It's all right there. And then there's also just a little bubble widget for whatever's playing. So it's got a now playing. It's not playing anything, so it says not playing. But you can control your media directly from your notification shade right here at the top of the screen. This is gorgeous. This is like the best of both worlds. We've got some of those modular elements for controlling lifestyle features that we have on the Pixel, the screen brightness just plummeted. Why did it do that? All right, sorry about that. We have that, but then also we have the smaller little bubble icons from Android 11. So it's a better use of space, but it's also better laid out. So you have more room. You have more room for all these activities. But then I just want to go into our actual settings. And immediately at the top of settings, we also get these kind of consumer hand-holding little widgets. So experience true-to-life haptic feedback. We have control over haptics right at the top. Image sharpener, enhance the definition of low-quality pictures and videos. And then emoji. I'm not a huge fan of like animated emojis, but OnePlus has this little engine where you can make an emoji as unique as you are. Or flexible windows. There's a consumer tutorial on how to use floating windows on the OnePlus 10 Pro, or the one-handed mode if you want to shrink the screen. These little tutorials are super handy. So this wasn't in Android 12, it definitely wasn't in Android 11, but you fire up your OnePlus 10 Pro, and there are these immediate settings at the top that are sort of fresh, they're new for OnePlus, things that you can do to kind of personalize and get more use out of your phone. I really like this. We do actually have a few updates to the iQ 9 Pro for how the phone functions and some of the fun stuff and the game performance, stuff like that. The phone isn't telling you that you have those those enhanced features or enhanced capabilities. The OnePlus 10 Pro is giving us some really sharp little toggles in our settings. So that once you've set up the phone, you see that it's on Android 13, you can see a bunch of things have kind of changed. You can go in and you've got handy tutorials on how to set all this stuff up. It's at once out of the way because it's in settings. It's not like it's all showing up in my notification shade and taking up room and just becoming noise in my notifications. But it's accessible for people who might want to dig a little deeper. This is the right place to put that stuff. And then I just like showing it off because we got this on Android 12. But it's this great little sleek slide maneuver. So wherever you're holding the phone, if you slide on the edge of the screen, it shrinks all of the icons on your home screen so that you can quickly go to a folder or go to an app and you can launch that app. And especially for that one hand use, this is actually, I think, a nicer direct, clean, simple interaction for people that might have some accessibility issues, like how you hold the phone, how you manipulate the phone, how you work with the phone. And there is, do I, come on. Oh, no, do it. So we also have a little side sense menu, same thing. There's a much higher focus on one-handability on the OnePlus 10, now running Android 13. So I'm not sad that Oxygen is gone, because a lot of this stuff is coming from ColorOS. We can complain about the Oppoification of the OnePluses, but this stuff is better. A little side panel, just like on a Samsung phone, you can put shortcuts, you can quick launch, the actions are super, super clean. If you're on your home screen, you've got this great accessibility control where you can slide menus very, very quickly so you can get to the apps. You don't have to go one-handed mode. You can slide all the apps that way. The performance has been stonking good. So using it all the way back to the Snapdragon 865 on my OnePlus 8, which, hold on, let me get this turned on too. Hello, I had to nuke my OnePlus 8, so it's gonna go through all the setup here again too. But I got to play with it for a bit, then I had to reflash it. This is really good. This is really good. On my OnePlus 9, come on. Oh, hello. So again, it's kind of interesting. We're running the gamut now. I very much believe when my Sony finally gets Android 13, what we're going to see is something very similar to just the sort of stock material design on the Pixel. I don't think Sony is going to put much of any work into the UI because they're doing a lot of work with their custom apps and custom software. Bridging the gap, we've got a phone like the Vivo, which still feels mostly like Android 11. This doesn't feel like a Pixel in the slightest. These two phones are very different in terms of layout, organization, performance, how they animate, how they do pixel level and detail blurring, how all of this stuff functions. This actually feels like an older phone. It's going to be more familiar to folks running Android 10 and Android 11. And then you move up to, or I shouldn't say you move up, you move over to the cousin of the iQ, and you get this OnePlus 10 Pro, which is kind of splitting the difference. It's working a little like an Oppo, it's working a little like a classic OnePlus, and it has a few of the design elements that are kind of interesting coming into Android 13 on the Pixel. This is good. This is great. This is competition. You have different devices that deliver different pros and cons, different strengths and weaknesses, and the UI is going to appeal to different folks, but they're all extremely high performance compute platforms. They just do different things than the competition. We should definitely be celebrating how even from the same sort of global organization, you know, these are sort of BBK parts bins between iQ and OnePlus. They share a lot of tech bits. They share a lot of DNA. They feel like significantly different kinds of devices. And even that to me is super exciting when we even get that kind of, I'm gonna say like bifurcation, that's way too complicated a word, but that kind of difference, even when they're sort of in a similar family of products. So I'm gonna take it back here. I've been seeing a whole bunch of comments, and I apologize that my setup for screen, for my top-down camera isn't as good at reading through some of those comments. So let's catch up on comments here, and we can kind of use that to start closing out the show. I'm going to take another drink of water here. I couldn't even reach my water over at my side desk over there. So just one second. All right, let me scroll back up. Gary the Fireman, I heart Android 13. It's been good. It really has. Again, all of the teething pains that we went through Android 12, Android 13 is a far less dramatic update. And it really is just refinement and polish, getting all the 12L stuff working in good order. It's been real nice. Let me get this out. So Aditya said, yes. Gormlord, I use a Snapdragon 845 handheld, and it's a mini PS2. I think that says something about the power of a five-year-old chip. Absolutely. The 845 is still overkill for most average consumer daily driver needs. Keep rocking it. I'm hoping, this is fingers crossed, I don't know that we'll really see this, but I'm hoping that with next generation ARM into 2023, late 2023 and early 2024, I'm hoping that we'll maybe be able to start seeing like really good mobile PS3 emulation. That to me has been one of the trickiest, is finding a good mobile PS3. The Steam Deck is so close. It can actually run some PS3 emulation. Doesn't do it very well though. And there are just a couple games that will never live beyond my PlayStation 3. I desperately want to move beyond my PlayStation 3. DTNL, dual camera, Juan, look at this guy, absolute professional podcaster. I don't know how well I did that, but it was a lot of rambling about Android, so that's pretty good. Dave Burns, at Some Gadget Guy, why do you have all those phones that betrayed you? Because OnePlus kicked my puppy, and I'm so sad that now it's not crappy oxygen, and it's better oxygen. Wah. I love, oh man. So this I think is hilarious. So iQ, I thought the BMW M3 color was for an iQ. So Vivo is sort of the global brand. iQ is like a subsidiary of a subsidiary. So they have a partnership with BMW M Motorsports. Let me see if I can pull this up on my iQ 9 Pro. Nope, that's food. They have a rotating carousel of different wallpapers. So that's a beautiful island scene. That's another island scene. That's another island scene. Come on, it's a castle. I want to see if I can get to it because I think it's hilarious. Oh, dang it. I was too fast. So there's a Jaguar. So on this BMW M Motorsport partnered phone, one of the wallpapers is a Jag. One of the wallpapers is a Mercedes. And we just passed a G-Wagon. There is no BMW wallpaper on the M Motorsport partnered iQ 9 Pro. And I think that's hilarious. It is the funniest thing. I love this phone. This is one of the most beautifully built phones of 2022. The fingerprint sensor is that enormous Qualcomm Max. The cameras are great. The screen is gorgeous. The performance is top tier. It is just liquidly, fluidly performant and fast. And I think it's hilarious that we get these IQ stripes and the BMW partnership. No BMW wallpaper. Does not exist. Hilarious. McCorkran. Absolutely, same thing. I was grateful the LG V60 kept the more space-efficient quick settings toggles and the separate data toggle. V60 handled Android 12 a lot better than many of the phones of that generation getting Android 12. There's the passcode, 1234. Dave Burns, Oxygen OS isn't Western-focused now and therefore bad. Man, I've been playing with all these phones. I got to tell you, the BBK flavors of all this, I'm kind of digging. I really am. We could go even harder into Oppo software design. It's the thing that is kind of a challenge because I like how liquidly performant Xiaomi is. Xiaomi's UI skin, it's all really fluid and bouncy and colorful. But I hate that if I go to my 12S Ultra, I have that split notification shade. So my toggles show up on one panel and my notifications show up on a different panel. That's a dumb thing to crib from the iPhone. I want it all in one. And I think over the next year, that's something that Xiaomi is going to stop letting people customize. Because on the Xiaomi 12T, I can still make it the old notification shade. On the Xiaomi 12S Ultra, that's not there anymore. And I bet you over the next year, that's something that Xiaomi will change. Gormlord, is it a smooth 120 though? Yeah. Is there choppy one? I mean, if you pick up a Samsung and it has 120 hertz refresh rate display on like a Galaxy A52, yeah, that's gonna suck. But we're not talking about those kind of daily driver phones. We're not talking about the Corollas. We're talking about like the sports cars here. All of them have been running real smooth. Man, that OnePlus 10 Pro is now gorgeous. And where I like it even better, the OnePlus 9 Pro got a nice shot in the arm. It is just so pretty. It's a really pretty UI. Without it being as sort of garishly bouncy as a lot of other phones, it is sleek. Really bubbly and animated, but sleek. And that's pretty rad. Dave Burns, but the Samsung panel has the right SEO, Juan. OnePlus doesn't have as good an SEO. I make way more money when Samsung is in the titles of my videos, so I don't think you're wrong there. From Ownscone. I'm going to say your name is Ownscone, and I'm probably wrong. Is the desktop mode on OnePlus fixed in Android 13, or is it still broken? So, on my OnePlus 10 Pro, it's more broken on Android 13 than it was on Android 12. Now I cannot get mouse or keyboard support, so I'm really anxious to see if this is an Android thing, that the desktop mode, the alternative display out on Android is broken in 13, or if that's a OnePlus thing. Usually OnePlus is the best to test that. From Android 10 through 12, I had the fastest and the best updates to showcase things like desktop modes for Android. Outside of the real desktop modes, LG Screen Plus is way better. Moto Ready 4 is the gold standard now, and Samsung DeX is still really, really good, right alongside the Honor Magic UI desktop mode, and Huawei. Huawei's desktop mode is still great too. But I'm just talking about like what Google provides for that alternate display out. I used to turn to OnePlus. It's better on Sony now. So my Xperia 1 Mark IV running Android 12 had a better alternate display mode than my OnePlus 10 Pro running Android 12. And now it's even less functional on Android 13. So I need to play with a few more. Might change with my OnePlus 8 Pro, might change with my OnePlus 9 Pro. But on the OnePlus 10 Pro, I can't open apps. I don't have mouse support with my sort of USB powered devices. It's not as functional, which is a bummer, because having that display out is such a huge premium tier feature. it really is handy being able to plug your phone into another screen and do things on that screen. Really, we're long overdue that as just sort of a general functionality for all expensive phones. Aiku, you had one job. I know, it's hilarious though. It's really funny. It's like, it's something as simple as a wallpaper, and I love showing it off. Like, here's my BMW M Motorsport Aiku with my Mercedes G-Wagon wallpaper. I love it. Onski. I'm sorry, man. Don't call me out with that A52, Juan. I know 120 hertz is bad. That's why I keep it off. I need to change my username, but I keep running into issues with that. I'm sorry, bud. In the year before, the Galaxy A series was just such a monster buy. And the A50 and the A51, I mean, just huge. They're brilliant phones. There is no surprise why Samsung is selling, like, I forget what the exact numbers are. I'm just making this up off the top of my head, but it's like almost 15-1 sales in favor of Galaxy A over Galaxy S. I feel like Samsung really dropped the ball in the mid-range this last year, and we lost an incredible feature like the headphone jack. And it doesn't matter if you have a high refresh rate display on a phone that can't keep up the performance to really drive that display. And now I can pick up a OnePlus 9 Pro. And like Barry was saying, you can shop an older OnePlus 9 Pro for like $400. You put that up against a Galaxy A series, you're not going to get the software updates. Samsung will give you better security patches. But if you want that hardware and you want that performance, and now you really want to use 120 hertz, I'm telling you, the new Oxygen OS is animating to an insane degree. The OnePlus 9 Pro is so good as a budget option, even coming in to the end of 2022. So it's really nice. I'm liking it a lot. And I feel like where techies have kind of ridden this bandwagon of OnePlus is now just Oppo, I don't care. It's a better phone. Do we want a better phone, or do you want to have an exclusive on a phone that doesn't perform as well, but it's really a unique software platform? I just don't get how that landed, but it makes sense because you need a new whipping boy. OnePlus has excellent SEO. Those videos get clicks. So where we lost LG, and LG was the whipping boy company, now OnePlus is the whipping boy company. You can always set up a comparison where the OnePlus can lose, and it's just so sad. And aren't we so sad? Because OnePlus used to be this enthusiast phone, but I guess it's just sad now, and I can make these videos, and all of these Android, Reddit enthusiasts can just kind of cluck along while ignoring the fact that the products have never been better than they've ever been in the history of the company. Oh, Raj, absolutely. I'm so glad I'm getting up to speed on these other brands. Raj says, I just think an Aiku and a Xiaomi are the best for mid-range in India. Hands down. What my experience is, again, and I started at the premium tier. So, I'm still getting up to speed on all these other devices. But getting to play with Aiku, starting with the X70, and getting more hands-on time with Realme and Redmi and Xiaomi and Poco. Poco's been rocking my socks lately. But what we've been able to experience now, like I still have it on my desk here, like this Aiku Neo 6 is a remarkably powerful phone. And in most markets, like the full MSRP was like $450 for a Snapdragon 870 and 256 gigs of storage with 12 gigs of RAM. And then it went on sale. And I don't get a phone like this here in the United States. So it was such a big deal to us when we got the Pixel 6a. Because the Pixel 6a is an uncompromising flagship-grade processor in a cheaper phone. The Pixel 6a is not a mid-ranger, it's a flagship killer. It goes toe-to-toe in that $400-ish dollar MSRP with the sweet spot for Vivo and for Xiaomi. And it's gorgeous. It's amazing when you can really kind of play with that kind of performance in a more wallet-friendly kind of package. That sucks about the desktop mode. I was considering the 8T and hoping the desktop mode would be fixed, but now I'm debating between three different devices, the Moto G100, the LG V60, or the Samsung Tab S7. It's tough. I still have to play around with it a bit more. Excuse me. And like I said, even just sort of now freshly starting up the OnePlus 10 Pro, maybe it's going to be a little different. I spent way more time on the OnePlus 8 Pro, then I had to nuke it and reset it. And so the OnePlus 9 Pro is really the phone I've left as my actual personal daily driver phone. So if a SIM card is going to go back in a OnePlus, it's probably going to go back in the OnePlus 9 Pro, not the OnePlus 10 Pro. So the OnePlus 10 Pro, I didn't feel as bad. Like, let me show you what it looks like when you start it up for the first time. And I should have done that with the iQOO also, but the iQOO didn't do anything. It started up Android 13. I got the little pop-up. Your update has finished successfully. And then you were just like, here's Android 13. I guess it's new. The OnePlus 9 went through this whole like, oh, welcome to your new operating system on your phone. It was so like white glove. It was so nice. It was like, I felt seen and appreciated. Oh, I love it. So folks, really good times. I am very excited for the direction of the semiconductor industry for consumer electronics. I feel we're going to be in great shape in the premium tier starting off 2023. I'm sure we're going to get some early launch announcements from some of these brands like, hey, we got to beat Samsung to the punch kinds of things. Like last year, didn't Xiaomi launch a phone in December? Maybe we'll see something like that again. I feel like there's good potential for this to already be kicking off the fresh new conversation on high performance handsets. And this is, again, where I'm going to say, if you're not really trying to replace computer work on your phone, what you can get in the middle mid-range and the lower mid-range is absolutely stunning. It's so good. And then if you just want to do more, there are very good reasons to step up to more expensive devices. So I'm very excited about that. And then also, just from finally getting a bit more of this Android 13 goodness on some of these other phones, I'm also just kind of excited to see that the act of customizing and skinning, producing a device that has a unique feel to it, that we're not just kind of caving to whatever Google is doing on the Pixel. The Pixel should be its own unique flavor of Android. OnePlus has its own unique flavor of Android. Xiaomi has its own unique flavor of Android. These little differences matter. Again, I mean, you can kind of get locked into one UI and then you don't want to leave Samsung, but then also there are specific benefits to living in one UI. If you're using Samsung DeX, that is a brilliant benefit to being in one UI. It's wonderful. So we should extend the same kind of consideration when OnePlus does something dramatic with the animation rendering engine for their UI, it makes the phone prettier. And that's rad. I definitely like that. So it's good. I've got so much work on my plate right now. I've got so much that I need to catch up on, that I need to shoot some side videos on. There will be a video published this week looking at LumaFusion versus PowerDirector, what you can really do with these devices on the go if you want to cut some of this video. I mean, again, I do this as the sort of like archivist for my family memories. The biggest chunk of my storage on my NAS is like scans of photos and family moments and just archives of video and photos. And a lot of those have been edited where I take, you know, little snippets of video during the day and I slam it all together and like, hey, that was a day at the zoo. A day at the zoo video isn't something that's super fun to watch unless you put a little care into crafting it. And then I have this 2-minute music video that is so much more fun than if I were just watching these random video clips. You don't have to wait to do that at a desktop. You don't have to transfer footage to your laptop. Your phone is probably faster. If you've been buying in the upper mid to premium tier, your phone can probably outpace your laptop or desktop. I'm on a Threadripper with the 2080 Ti right now. And if I put it into a foot race with a Pixel 7 Pro, I'm not confident my Threadripper and 2080 Ti would be able to beat it in the exact same project, rendered to the exact same high quality in 4K. That's awesome. How do we not get stupid excited about the future of mobility, of communication, and of working on the go? Brilliant. As El Jefe Reviews would say, chef's kiss. Mwah. So, folks, normally I end this with like a, I hope you all have a lovely week and that you're doing awesome with your tech and everything. Here in the United States, this week is Thanksgiving. It definitely comes from some problematic historical inaccuracies in how we demonstrate, you know, sort of the merging of populations from more European cultures and more indigenous cultures here in the United States. And coming from a family that is rich in that tradition of indigenous peoples, this is our ability to take our day of family and of remembrance and make sure that we're really remembering and we're celebrating our families. So if you're in the United States and you're inclined to celebrate on a day like Thanksgiving, I hope you have a wonderful time. And I hope you're able, as always, that you're safe, that you're warm, that you're well-fed, and that you're spending time with people who care about you. That is always my wish for you on every day, but it hits doubly hard on these special days like Thanksgiving. I will be making some time in my week to spend some time with some family, to break bread, and to kind of unplug for a bit. So while I'm definitely going to be putting out some more work and some more videos, I might even cut up some parts of this podcast just to put that out there. I also hope that you and your family are able to find some of that time. And even if you're not of the North American persuasion celebrating this kind of a day this week, I'm always going to say, find any excuse to break some bread with people who care about you. You know, celebrate American Thanksgiving by proxy, and also just treat yourself to like your favorite pizza or your favorite, you know, sort of like a, you know, bento box or something. Just do something for you. I'm going to be celebrating this week, and I kind of want everybody else that I know to celebrate too. So folks, we're going to wrap this up. We will definitely be keeping people posted on best of our week. That'll probably be Friday if I talk to TK about when we're going to be able to stream that. But throughout the week, we've got incredible videos and live streams just going across a number of channels. It's really going to be kind of a wonderful week to kind of stay tapped in with tech and conversations and all the things we're thankful for, especially from us more American producers. So have a phenomenal week. Have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. I'll catch you all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. I love you all. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.